Welcome to the Culinary Mechanic Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Zaterka. If you were listening recently, you got to hear my conversation with Josh Sharkey. And I mean, it was so good, right? Like, we just got going. And I've found that in a perfect world, these podcasts for me live somewhere around 25 to 30 minutes. Because to be perfectly honest with you, y'all don't listen past 30 minutes. Yes, I'm watching you. And so that's cool. Like, we figure it out, we do something about it. But the conversation is so good, and he's got so many great things to tell us. And I feel like he and I kind of hit on some cool things that I couldn't just throw it away. Like, I had to split it up. So I've done this before, and it worked fairly well, and people seem to embrace it. So I'm trying it again. This is going to be part two of Josh Sharkey from Mies. So I just hope that you guys enjoy it. Please keep listening, follow, subscribe, check it out on YouTube, the videos, see my ugly mug, check it out. Otherwise, it's Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, you know the deal. Do the thing. You know, I'm not gonna lie, I've heard you on a bunch of podcasts, and I freaking love this story, so I want people to hear it. Will you tell us kind of the inception of Mies, how that came about? Because I think it's a phenomenal thing. And I will, before I let you talk, I will say I've worked with a ton of software, right? I have worked with a ton of different restaurants and companies and seen a bunch of different things. And I've used Mies a bit, and I can't tell you how intuitive and smart it is. So I love that like somebody's doing it from what I would describe as our angle, right? As opposed to starting from the numbers and then working out, and then maybe we get a recipe component that maybe looks good, right? Maybe feels good, or mm-hmm. is workable. So please tell us yeah, how sure. That became.
Absolutely. And you know, I think if it's okay, I'll share a little bit of some a couple other things that were part of the inception, not at that time, because the original inception is a little bit novel, right? Like, this was 2003. I was working at Danny Meyer's restaurant for Chef Floyd Cardoz at Tabla. And in the mornings, I worked for free at the Cella Maria under Chef Dan Latham, it was Mario Batali's Cella Maria. And we were making salumi all morning. So I would come in at 6 a.m. and just start cleaning intestines and making, you know, prosciutto and pancetta and copa and lomo and before I would go to work. And I kept a book of every recipe, as we do, right? And ideas of like time, temperature, humidity, and every little detail of how to make these things. And like we do on my days off, I'd go stage at other restaurants just to see. And I was staging at this restaurant, Veritas, and I lost the fucking notebook. I was devastated. And I've lost notebooks before, but this one was just like the end of it. You know, like I was just about done with this one to put it away. And it had so many recipes and so many ideas and so much detail. So the novel idea originally from way back when was, oh my God, I want a digital recipe platform because I can't just write these things in a notebook. Now, again, back then it was novel because there was nothing. There was no Evernote. I don't even think Google Docs was around. Now there's a lot more things you can do to digitize, you know, things. But, you know, what we've grown into is far more than that. And I think, you know, if you fast forward, that idea stuck with me as I went to more restaurants. You know, the next restaurant after Tabla was Boulay, and there was no recipes. And so nothing, you know. I was blessed once Evan Rich, wrote down the recipe for the pomme puree of just the ratio of butter to potatoes. Otherwise, just nothing. And you just had to figure it out. I'm like, this is just dumb, right? Like, classic dishes like the ocean herbal broth, and there's just no recipe. I'm like... so then that sort of stuck with me of like, okay, you know, nothing's going to scale if you don't have documentation. And I kept like, you know, growing from there. And I also like, I had a hard time, 'cause I'm like, how is this supposed to be made? You know, 'cause someone would show me something and then Boulay would come and say, that's not right. I'm like, okay, how is it? What does right mean? You know, what is it supposed to look like and feel like and taste like, and what's the recipe? So that really stuck with me. And then, you know, I went to work for Grey Kunz after that. And, you know, For one, everything was a recipe, which was awesome. And we did have a tool. It was like, I think it was called like food something. It wasn't good. It was a very archaic system. And it was just to get a cost. It was like we never used those recipes. So we had our recipes, like we all know, like in a book, and then we had like this system that was like costing recipes, waste of time. But I remember one time I was, we used to go to a festival in Lumiere in Montreal, and we would sort of take over a kitchen and do a tasting menu in that kitchen. So every year, I mean, you had
Awesome.
amazing chefs like, you know, from all over, whether it was like Pierre Garnier or Danielle Ballou or so, like all coming and taking over kitchens. And so we took over this kitchen and we had this whole tasting menu. And it was just Gray and I that would go. And, you know, it was just me and their entire kitchen. And I was like, and me being me, I was like, everything has to be perfect, obviously. So I was like, how am I going to get all these people to make this entire tasting menu the way that, you know, I needed to be made? And we had like our very classic truffle soup, and there's so much detail in how you make that, and the blanquette de veau and the veal belly, getting that right, and all these things. And so I literally made videos and DVDs and sent them to the restaurant like a month ahead of time of like
Wow.
every dish of how to make it. And the specs of what I wanted, and this is what a veal breast looks like when it's what we want, and this is what we don't want, and this is exactly how you make the truffle soup, and you have to saute the shallots till they look like this, and this is how much you want to crash it, and it should look like this, and the color should look like this, and it should be a slight purple hue, and don't add the truffle juice to the end, like all these things. And I like recorded it all because it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do if I just get there and I'm supposed to, you know, do this tasting menu for 200 people over the course of a couple of days with this whole team. And it's just me because Gray, you know, is not on the line. He's, you know, schmoozing, which is he should be doing. So that was like this other sort of piece for me of like, one, why are all our recipes here in this book? And then we have to duplicate them somewhere else. Poor Jay Lawless broke his arm. He was a sous chef. So he spent like 3 months just writing all the recipes into this food system in some in like readable way just for like costing. So now we have like duplicate efforts and you're spending time on that. And there's no place for us to document how to make these things. Cause you know, like when you see a recipe, if you look back like 10 years ago at a recipe, you know, for anything, it's just a list of ingredients and it might say a couple things, but there's no way you could make that thing again. So that was sort of like a follow on of like each time this thing was happening, I was like, man, why doesn't this exist? And then I opened my own restaurants and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need a real profit margin on these things. Like this is, we're selling, I mean, I opened a restaurant where we were selling like, you know, thousands of hot dogs a week, and we were making our own sausages and our own sauerkraut, and I mean, all these things. And I had to understand profit margins. And I did, and I was like, how am I going to do this? And so I built out this whole thing like everybody does. And so finally, it's just like, what the heck? This is crazy. Is there any software that does all these things? And the only thing I could find was inventory software, finance software. And I'm like, I don't need to make an invoice of my recipe. I need like to make a recipe with all these things. So that's how Mies was born. Is I finally was just like, okay, no one's gonna build this, and I don't know how anybody would build it if they haven't had the experience of what I've gone through. So I just, you know, said screw it and sold the restaurants into this.
Thank goodness, because I mean, I was talking to another chef recently, and we were talking about Mies, and he's like, "Man, they have so much effort put into like the yields of the vegetables." I'm like, yeah, but I worked for corporate restaurants, right? Like you're talking about recipes and whatnot, and I'm thinking back to like 2011 and 12, and here in Seattle, I rebrand helped a pretty large corporation rebrand a restaurant. And I got taken to corporate office, and they made me sit in a fucking corner, and like they would hand me my recipe book and go, "These 100 recipes need some love, because they're not like the database administrator was like, they're not ready yet." And he'd make me thank God, right? Like, and just because in the subsequent 14 years that I've been in the industry, like my recipes are really good now. But it was like, not everybody gets that. Not everybody gets the opportunity to like have to comb through, and like he would go through and red pen my recipes. Like, this is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. I don't understand how you get from here to here in the steps. He goes, "This conversion is not right," or "This doesn't make any sense," all of that. So I fully understand how much effort goes into like the difference between Brunoise onion and Julienne onion and the volume and being able to and to then take that to a recipe and just go, it's
Yeah, I
there.
mean, and the other thing is it's so much duplicative effort. And I think that's what, we as chefs don't realize, because we just go and we're gonna go. First of all, most of us obviously don't go and weigh, okay, how much did I lose when I peel this and dice this? That, you're just kind of guessing. Oh, that guessing, when you have a 5% margin of error, 10%, whatever the thing is, oh, of course your whole menu, that's a lot of money you end up losing. But one person should go and weigh all those onions and get the average yield of a peeled onion, because we're all buying the same Spanish onions. Yes, you might do something slightly different, but come on, we're peeling the thing off. We're all buying the same horse carrots. We're all buying the same peppers, and we're all buying dark rye flour or aged soy sauce. Like, we're all buying these things. One person, so that's what we did. Was I just spent 5 years before I launched Mies. I was lucky enough to have like 100+ kitchens, so we could test these things hundreds of times and understand like the average yield when you peel a head of garlic, and how much does that head of garlic weigh on average? How much does a clove weigh? How much does a minced cup of garlic weigh versus a versus sliced or slivered? And it all seems innocuous, but it just saves so much time. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff,
All right.
because it's such a waste of time for both of us to have to do that in two different kitchens,
Holy.
and to your point, the other piece that I think we as chefs all are guilty of, all of us, and one because it's just hard, is making recipes explicit. You miss so much. Part of what we do when we onboard a customer very often is we don't just like import your recipes, because it's really fast to just get them in, get them
Right.
structured. But we identify, like, hey, you have an instruction here that says finish with hazelnut oil, but there's no hazelnut oil in your ingredients, or you have like a whole set of ingredients here. There's pistachios and there's Szechuan peppercorns and there's some togarashi. Nowhere in your instructions explains what you're supposed to do with that. So, like, can you add some clarity there? And now we're working with AI, which is pretty cool, to help identify these things faster. But
Oh wow,
pretty bad
that's
at that,
cool.
We're pretty
Oh,
bad at like
awful.
being explicit, and then we expect people to execute this recipe that we want. But there's way more that's just left to chance. And like any of us, like most of us are pretty particular about what we want. And it's funny,
Totally.
for as particular as we are as chefs for what we want, is the other end of the spectrum of how vague we tend to be with how we want to get that done,
Well, I'm not gonna lie to you, right? I so thoroughly believe in documenting, right? Document, document, document. I fucking hate writing recipes.
Yeah, sucks.
It's so important to me, but it's like, oh, this is awful. I had the opportunity to work with a, I, you know, I was a whatever, a multi, I was basically a regional chef for a small company, and I had the culinary director. His job was to be creative, and my job was to tether his balloon.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be out here and I'd be like, and I'd say, I'd look, I'd take you after a while, after a few years of working together, I'd look at the recipe and I'd go, all right, let's go in the kitchen. You show me what your vision of this, of like where this lives on the line, how, and he'd be like, oh, and then you pass this over here, and then this person does this, and then they pass it back. And I was like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. I was like, you can't do that. He's like, why? I said, because in the middle of a Friday night, you're gonna have like something deep fried that's not supposed to be deep fried, and you're gonna have something, it's just like you can't go in two directions.
Yeah.
So either give the mise en place over there and pass it this way.
I think, Simon, that's also one of the things that, creates the propensity for greatness with a chef if they do other things, is that when you're a really good cook, just think about, the sort of like the little micro business that we create in our station, where like every single step counts. And I know that, like, when I turn around, my spoons, my bain marie of spoons needs to be here, not here, because my saucepans are here and my plating station is here. And that extra step times, 400 steps in an hour is going to slow down this. And I know that I want my salt on this side, not this side, because when I'm seasoning, I'm going to do it after I add these things. All those things that we consider, and like where we store, the backup, salsa verde versus where we're storing, the backup fish, or all that, all those considerations are just preparedness and planning that we take for granted is like a really, really valuable skill that you can then deploy to so many other things that you're gonna do. And it's a skill that every single good cook has,
You just said two of my favorite words, preparedness and planning. Like I can't tell you how many times I see and talk to chefs and they're like out of breath and they're running around. And I'm like, hey man, why don't you like spend 20 minutes and like have a plan and then communicate the plan? When I learned to do that, my efforts multiplied and it changed my life. Like somebody actually said, stop, get organized, and then tell me what's happening so that I can help you. And I was like, oh, okay.
It's what's really interesting is, and I learned this a long time ago, actually at Boulay. I realized that like to be truly creative, you have to be really prepared. And it sounds like like a contradiction, but I remember, Boulay would come in and like at five, right before service, drop a whole pig, and a whole bunch of vegetables from his garden, and just change the whole menu. And we would have to, basically go and be like, okay, I have to go make fresh pasta, right downstairs and make that. And I gotta go confit this fennel, and I gotta go pass this like pork fat through a tammy and juice this parsley, and doing all of that. If I wasn't already ready for service, I would be. It would be mayhem. And you can't really innovate unless you're prepared, and pre because everything is gonna come at your way. Chaos will always happen in anything that you do. That's not just relegated to cooking. And the more prepared you are, the better. I know I want to be sensitive. Like some people, they just don't operate that way. They're more ad hoc. I it sounds like you and I might be similar. Like I could never, when I have Thanksgiving dinner, like 4 weeks beforehand, I have timing of like when, okay, at 2:15 p.m. this is coming out of the oven on Tuesday, so that I can let it sit in the marinade overnight. And this thing is gonna get like that is the entire thing is planned out, because the day of, I got my aunt coming who's gonna ask me to like check out this one thing and talk to me for an hour, and my kids are gonna be running around, and my wife's gonna need something. All that's gonna happen. So like I need to know that everything is planned ahead of time to the T, because half of it's going to have to change anyways. But it can't, it's so much harder to change things if you're not prepared first,
I once had a sous chef, and he's like, ah, it doesn't matter how much I plan, it all gets thrown to the sh thrown to shit. And I used to tell him, yeah, but you got to at least have a map, man. You got to at least look at the map and know where you're going.
Yeah, a plan doesn't, a plan can't go wrong if you don't have a plan.
And if you don't have a plan, come on.
Yeah,
It's not
it's similar to when I, we don't actually ever hear this anymore, which is good. But like 3 years ago, it hasn't been that much time, so I'm sure it still exists. But like we would hear chefs saying, "Oh, I don't use recipes." I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Like, that doesn't happen. You can't. You have to have some sort of base of what someone is supposed to start with. Otherwise, how can you expect anybody to?" execute your food. When I hear, I hear someone say, "I don't use recipes," I'm like, "Okay, you do, or if you don't, it's just you in the kitchen." Or I promise you, people are not making it the way that you expect, and your customers aren't getting the same thing.
I mean, I've ex I came across a kitchen last year, and they're like, I was like, where's your recipe book? And the guy walked over to the and grabbed this binder that like stuck to his hand. It was just so nasty. And I was like, when was the last time that was open? He's like, I don't know, but the recipes are in here. I'm like, does your team know how to use them? And he's like, no, they've all been here so long, it doesn't matter. I was like, but what happens when you fire that guy? Or, oh no. My team's not going anywhere. I was like, man, you're not living in reality. But yeah, I mean, it happens. It's God, it shouldn't. Funny thing is, once we reinstated a recipe book and made copies and started handing them out to the cooks, people were like, "Oh, this is amazing. We've never had this before. Thank you." And all of a sudden, the food cost dropped a full percent, like
Of course,
overnight,
yeah.
overnight, just because, like, and the chef was like, "Oh, okay, cool."
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, I think that's important to think about when you're considering this idea of like of do you look at the recipes? How often do you look at them? Yeah, of course. After a while, you just know how to make that thing, right? And maybe you've even memorized the recipe, and that's fine too. But one, yeah, you're gonna have new cooks, you're gonna have, things that you have to pass down this knowledge. And two, recipes are not a static thing. They have to be iterated upon over time because things change, there are, I was just talking about this, I think a couple weeks ago with another chef on our show. Like, I mean, like russet potatoes are not the same starch content in September. What if you made that recipe in July? And there are lots of things like that. Like, there are summers when tomatoes just, there's way too much rain and those tomatoes are watery. So if you have a sauce and you were supposed to use, 2 grams of sugar per 200 grams of tomato or something like that, that might change. Or you were supposed to cook it down for X time. All that stuff, the recipe you need to have, but things change. Like, we're using like raw ingredients that over time, things are different about them. Some asparagus is sweeter different years than other asparagus. And yes, you want to have a recipe, but if no one's ever looking at that, then maybe they're all magically just, able to adjust and that's it. But who's documenting, like, make sure that you look for this and things like that. So I think you should always be looking at them, at least as frequent as you can.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think back to 2 years. I don't know how it was for you, but over here on the West Coast, 2 years ago, with the lettuce shot from like $20 a case to $100 a case. And I worked with a couple different restaurant groups at that time, and they like wholly changed the lettuce that they were buying just because they couldn't do romaine. It was just, it was killing them, it was a small, fast casual restaurant.
And that happens. I mean, avocados spike sometimes, limes, there's all kinds of stuff that, and you have to be able, have to be able to adjust, but then also just, the weather changes. Weather affects these things. The amount of
Well,
rain that you get is going to
and
affect.
it's changing every year now, right? Like climate, to tell me as a chef that climate change isn't real, yeah, no way.
Fun little like story for you. This past weekend, I was moderating a panel at the chef conference in Philly, and it's a really amazing panel with some just incredible chefs from Noma, and I was really great mixologist. But the next panel was Alain Ducasse, and he was doing his memoirs. And this is in his book that he just released.
Right.
But there was a story. He was in town in New York, and he stopped by Dan Barber's restaurant, the Stone Barns, in Westchester. And Dan, he only had like 30 minutes to eat, and so Dan gave him bread and butter, and he was really excited about the butter because they, they make their own butter, and he was so excited to give Alain Ducasse this butter, and Alain ate it, and was clearly like not super excited about it, and started asking questions like, was it raining, when you made this, and were the cows grazing close by the barn, or were they far away? And did you hand mix this butter, or did you whip it in a machine? And Dan was like, "Oh no, it was, I don't think it was raining, and no, we do it by hand." We always, the cows are just grazing right by the barn. And so I was like, okay. And then Dan, like, a week later, he went and checked. I don't know if it was a week later or a couple weeks later, he went to check, and turns out the farmer had been testing the cows grazing, a couple miles away, 7 fields away, because the fields were running low on, they're just trying to repair the grass. So they were, in fact, grazing far away from the farm, which impacts like the richness of the soil, because there's less manure and things like that. And the intern actually had been mixing the butter in a mixer. He saw the intern doing it later. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, chef, I realized that actually it's a lot faster if I do it in the mixer. And it was raining in the farm world, so yeah, we had a lot of rain last week. And so it turns out Alan was right about all these things. And butter is a recipe, right? It's literally, cream that you're just whipping, but all those things matter, right? And if you use that butter and the intention is for a certain dish, that can impact that. So all these things are dynamic, they're changing, and you need to have a recipe clearly. How much salt are you using? 1% salt in that butter? 2%? Like that's important. But all these other things, matter. So I thought that was just an incredible, like, how the hell did you know that, chef? Like, that's insane. But also just a great example of why these things matter.
You want to talk about honing skills. To be that in touch with what's happening in your mouth, to have that much lived experience just blows me away. I mean, I taste things for a living, You taste things for a living. I taste things at home all the time, and still every once in a while I'm like, how did I not taste that yesterday? And so, but I think that's a phenomenal story. Wow, what a great conversation, man. I love the way it has meandered for us. One of the last, I think, as somebody who has gone from cook to chef to business owner and now tech entrepreneur, I'd love for you to share. I don't know, you got some thoughts for us on for fresh young culinarians, or not so young, but just people starting out in the industry, what would you like to pass on if there's nothing else to pass on?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, it's tough with these questions because so many things that are cliche for a reason, and so many of them stick with me. And I'm a big geek, Stoic philosophy and things like that. But a couple of things I'll say is one, it's going to take you a lot longer than you think to accomplish what you want to accomplish. But I promise you will if you keep at it. The most people just don't keep at it long enough for it to work. And as long as you keep at it, you will succeed. It might not be tomorrow. It might not be this year. It might not be next year. But if you really want it, it will happen. And I think that's something that people take for granted, especially when you're younger, take for granted. And you look at a decade and you're like, oh my God, I don't even think about that far away. But if you can think in terms of decades, it's incredible how much you can accomplish. The other thing I will say that I live by, that's something that I think about so often, is just asking myself, how am I complicit in the conditions that I am experiencing today that I say that I don't like? If something is going wrong, whether it's with my team or my life or my family or my business, the first thing I ask myself is like, how am I complicit? What part do I have in this? Because there's always something that we can control, and that's kind of all that matters, because everything else is out of your control. You have to accept it. But I always ask myself that, and it's served me pretty well, throughout the years.
Love it. I love it. I gotta say, you broke the cl some of the cliches that are on that have come through this podcast for me, because you didn't bring up Bourdain's Pirates. I mean, I've talked to folks all over the country, and every one of them is just like, oh, we were a band of pirates. I'm like, oh my God, okay. But I just love it. I think that acknowledging your the part the role you play in something is pretty freaking powerful.
I
Josh,
appreciate
thank you
it.
so much for joining us today, man. I just love it. I love that you've got a different take on the world given that what you've been able to accomplish. I can't wait to see what's next. I can't wait to see kind of how Mies continues to evolve. And for me personally, I think that looking out into the future, I'm interested to see what other people do to riff off of what you have begun with Mies, because I feel like you've kind of changed the paradigm of what restaurant sort of restaurant management software can be, And so I think it'll be interesting to look 3, 5, 10 years down the road and go, oh yeah, well, oh, this is the common thing. Well, yeah, but I got some news for you, pal. That was me's, and it was a good while ago now.
I hope so. I hope so, man. Well, thank you as well. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you taking the time to do shows like this and helping, and I'm excited to see you grow as well. All
Thank you very much.
right, brother.
To all of you out there, thanks for playing along, and we'll see you next time.